My name is Jack Sage. My topic today is Washington history, Native Americans. Start out with the Chinook jargon. Up above, I have Chinook jargon. To shoot seed, and 12 shoot seed, Shahapan and Samish. These are all language, basic tongues. The Chinook jargon took Chinook words, Chinook tribe, which originally were in this area. They were the traders. And in order to do any trading, they had a universal language. And so it's made up of French, English, and Indian tongues. The next one is Lushoot Seed, which is northern Puget Sound. It's Western Washington. Northern Puget Sound, this area up in here, that's their tongue. If they can communicate with each other, it's almost a dying tongue. Very few know it. And then the 12 shoot seed is one in the lower Puget Sound. At Puyallup and Seattle are running schools for young people because there's only about 10 people know this 12 shoot seed. Fluently, and it's a language that was used when the governor came out to Governor Isaac Stevens came out to make treaties. These people use these tongues. The Shahapi thing is a Eastern Washington one, and Samish is basically a Western Washington, which is on the coast and any rivers, and you'll see ish sign. That's usually water on a name. The words I have up here are Chinook jargon. We have this word on Lake Chelan. You probably, as you came by Chelan, there's a little settlement. Beyond, there's a Manson, and then there's this other little settlement. And it's an Indian word meaning potato. We have a couple of them in Western Washington. We have Wapato Lake in South Tacoma. And we have Wapato Creek out in our tide flats in Tacoma. Kahawea, it means welcome or hello or how do you do, is what that means. Yes, for years, Tacoma had signs in all their intersections telling about a trail, and then they had a map that went along with this, and they had this on the top of the sign, Pilchuck. Now, this is a mountain we have in Western Washington. It means blood. Tai'i is chief. You call somebody a Tai'i, you call them a chief. This is a tough one, hee-hee. You know what that is? Laughter. See, a lot of the words, they just turn it around. Also, C-L-Y, cly, is cry. Mm-hmm. Now, quite often, Indians had a tough time with the R's and L's. And so that was a tum-tum. And that's, the cardiologists have that, that's heart, tum-tum. Mm-hmm. We have Alki, which is pronounced now, but it's really Alki. And it's the future. And that when the Seattle was being founded at Alki or Alki Point, all the natives and all the whites thought it was going to be New York. So it meant in the future. So it was Alki, Seattle, in the future is going to be like New York. Cultus is worthless. We have Cultus Point on our coast. Wawa, this is one I'm good at. That means talk or speak. Wawa. Hayak is rapid. And we have a ski area. A rapid ski runs. So that's Hayak. So they took that Indian name and put it on one of their ski runs. This is my favorite. Muckamuck. Muckamuck. That's food. So I've learned the basic words. Mamaluse. Now there's an island in the Columbia River. Mamaluse. It's a burial ground, and it means death. Lip-lip, that means boil. Now, how they got that, I don't know, but it means boil on boiling. Let's see, salt chuck, I gotta check that. Oh, that's, let me get that because it's, oh yeah, salt chuck, just what it sounds like. Ocean. You got salt in there and then chuck, whatever that means, I'm not sure. We have skookum, and that means strong. We got Skookum Chuck River, which is near Centralia, and it used to be a pretty strong stream. They put a dam on it for power. See, Sepu, and it's actually means chapeau or hat, and that's what they. Some of the words that they use were very common. Boston man was American or English. In the East Coast, they used that. A potlatch was another word they used, and it meant sharing. And a potlatch ceremony was you gave everything away. You invite all your friends and all your neighbors in, and then you gave everything away. The more you gave away, the next time somebody else had it, the more you would receive back. And so it was a kind of a sharing, a potlatch. I think that's most of the words. There's only 300 really basic words in the jargon. But it worked out pretty well. And here's how it originated. They said the white explorers and so forth came out in the early 1800s. And the Indians wanted to trade. They wanted to get rid of their salmon and their furs and their pelts. But there was no common language. And so this was developed over the time of years, over several years. It was even developed even before Lewis and Clark came, even before 1804 and 1805 and 6. They had some kind of a jargon because a lot of ships would come in close and do trading with these natives. When Lewis and Clark came, the Chinook Indians didn't like them because Lewis and Clark would not trade. And they were... wouldn't have anything to do with Lewis and Clark, so they had a hard time getting supplies. It's a good thing they had Sacagawea and her husband along to help carry out transactions with the natives because they wouldn't do anything with Lewis and Clark because they had limited supplies and they didn't want to get rid of them. When our wagon train pioneers came out, there was a booklet put out and it says, "Be sure and bring trade goods." And so they brought lots of beads, little knives and so forth. Because whenever you needed any venison or anything, well, then you had trading goods. But that was the reason they started the Chinook jargon. Over 100,000 people in the Northwest knew it. All my relatives down as far as my grandfather all knew it. And they spoke it quite often. When they said skookum, that meant get out of the way. My grandma was strong. She was going to spank us if we get into trouble. Skookum was one, and scat. Well, of course, that wasn't a Chinook. But a lot of these words were used, and I have a handout on some of them. It's a hymn and also a blessing that they used, and it has all the Chinook words with it. I had one, it's a blessing before meals. I had another one, a Chinook Lord's Prayer. In fact, I found several Lord's Prayer. And they were kind of interesting what the words they used. Kloshi was good. Like Our Father Who Dwells on High was Nasiki Papa, Katska, Mitlet Kopa, Saghali. I may not pronounce it right, but that's just about what it sounded like. That's Our Father Who Dwells on High. And that was the first part of it. Kloshi was good. Micah or Miki, I believe is the way they pronounce it. Their eyes, single I's and single E's, were pronounced long as a rule. Like Ketchless has got two E's, and that's a short one. And Keechless, let me get this straight. There's two lakes up there, and Lake Ketchless has got two E's in it, K-E-E, and it's the one that you follow.
You mean on I-90?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was Cochise.
Cochise is the other one. Oh. And that's up in the hills. Cochise. But the natives, now like my grandmother, our great-grandmother knew, she knew English, she knew Chinook and Chinese, as I've told the class before, because she ran a boarding house in the Dalles, and all the Chinese laborers that worked on a railroad, many of them stayed in boarding houses, and she ran a boarding house. And she knew how to speak Chinese. So when she moved up into the Yakima Valley with her son, my grandfather, they conversed back and forth whenever we kids were around, so we didn't know what they were jabbering about, you know. They were probably telling what little brats we were or something. I'm not sure. Anyway, is there any questions about the Chinook jargon?
When you are quoting these prayers, I assume you must be saying that the missionaries translated into Chinook so that they could teach the Indians.
That's what they did, okay. Especially down. This is from the Oregon historical book that I've got. Most of these, and that's about the only place that they used the Chinook jargon was on the Columbia River. The other missionaries used Flathead language as a rule, and they had a book printed with some of the hymns and so forth. But this is basically on the Columbia River, which is our major trading point. And it was the missionaries interpreted, so I just copied off what they had. I've got from several books that were published about missionaries. I have about almost 100 words, and so I only got 200 to go, and I'll get them all eventually. Well, it won't do me any good. We'll get in. Basically, I told you last time about the archaeology in Washington, and probably the earliest natives came about anywhere from 10 to 20,000 years ago. The Native Americans do not believe that they came the way we believe they did, and that was across the Siberian Bering Sea ice bridge. And there's two times in the geological history when they could have done it. One is when the ice age was so heavy in the world that all the ocean's levels dropped. And so there was a natural land bridge from Siberia across to Alaska. And it only took about 40 meters of water droppage in the oceans to open it up. And when the ice was frozen, ice ages, they said it was many times that. So it was very easy for them to cross. Also, they could cross between the ice ages when one backed up, another one came in. There was a gap in there, and they could also cross then. And the reason they crossed was to hunt animals. They had a lot of animals from Siberia and Russia that would come across to a warmer climate in North America. And so, of course, your natives would come along. Some stayed and some went back, but most of them stayed. And so we had 19 sites in the state of Washington, and I remember there was Nia Bay had one way up here, and that was one of the old ones. The oldest one that we believe in is right close to where Pasco is, it's up further. It's where the Palouse River comes into the Columbia. Near it is Palouse Falls, Marmas Man. And it's they found some artifacts that they've carbon dated to almost 20,000 years ago. They have human skeletons in it, which they had, which is unusual. They're at least 10,000 years old. They made the monumental dam, which backed up the water and flooded it. And so they had to cover up all the artifacts that weren't taken out. And so someday they figure that they'll be able to salvage, go back in there. Maybe when they eliminate some of the dams, they'll be able to do some more research. The Mastodon site, we talked about, that's near Squim. And they figure that's about 12,000 years ago. One of the ribs on the Mastodon had a spear point driven into it, a bone spear point is what it was. And driven into it, and they dated that mastodon at 12,000 years ago, It's on private land, but the farmer is not allowed. He was digging a duck pond, and he wasn't allowed to finish it. He set up a little museum, and just as soon as he announced it, my wife and I went up and I took pictures of it and so forth, and it's a huge tusk on the thing. Okay, but most of these sites were all native. The one that's very important to us is a lot of right close up in here was the Ozette dig. And what happened, they had a village right along the water, and what happened is a mud slide came down and covered everything up, fabrics and everything, and they survived by being, it's just like seeing them in the cement, and they were preserved, and the mats and everything else. And they're about, I think about 2,000 years, something like that, but they've had more than that. They have 4,000 years.
Okay. It's also explained by tsunami, because the geologists last week were talking about the evidence along the coast, you know, of mm-hmm. very forests and things like that, where huge tidal waves must have come in. So could it come from the other direction also there, or?
You mean the slide?
Well, yeah, stuff that would be loosened, but I'm
oh, yeah.
that'd be related to the tsunami, the tidal wave.
Oh, yeah. We find, in fact, we find a lot of stuff from Asia on the shores all the time. Mm-hmm. And whenever they have a big earthquake over there, and we get one of those tides like that, they go high up on the bank. Mm-hmm. And it could have also washed that village out. Mm-hmm. And it could have washed out many villages. The early explorers, as they came along the coast, they needed water, and they'd see where all... We have a lot of rivers. We have the creeks, the Ho, and the... well, let's see, and the Quinault, all of them go into the ocean, mm-hmm. and they're all a green areas, real green. And you can see from out at sea that they were had fresh water, and so they send crews ashore, and the Indians would wait for them, and then they'd kill them and take all their iron and stuff that they had with them. They were very vicious. In fact, there's one memorial down the beach, right in here, Robert. That's to a ship that lost quite a few of the crew. They came in not once, but twice, trying to get water. And they were killed by the natives. Natives hid up in the trees. And they were always looking for the foreigners with anything metal of any kind, because they made blades and even made arrowheads out of any iron or copper or anything else they found. Okay, is there any other questions about, yes?
How do the Native Americans think that they came here? What are the traditions?
They think that God put them here directly, just put them down, their God, which they say is just like our God. But that's what they believe, and they didn't come from anywhere else, but there's a strong resemblance between Asian and Native Americans, and it's... And so it's debatable, but some of the tribes just don't believe that. Okay, any other questions on? I'll go on to the Indian tribes. I had a list. I haven't got very many. Anyway, there's about 37 tribes on there, and four of them are not federally recognized. But these are the major tribes of Washington. But there's also little branches of each one of these. The Kathlamet is down on the Columbia River. This minister who fell and banged himself up, he's right close to a little town called Stella, where he's got a small Lutheran church. And I saw him this morning. He said he fell out here and cut his chin. We have some of them are extinct, like the Chimacum. And Chimacum is near Port Townsend, but the tribe is no longer around. It's extinct. It's on the near Port Townsend and Hood Canal. The ones on rivers like the Ho River and Quilt, Quileute is on the Ho River, and that's one of our rainforest areas. It's the furthest one up. We have the Ho River. We have the Queets. And the Quinault, and they're all green areas. rainforest. Beautiful. I've been camping in the Queets, for instance, and it'll be a pouring rain. It rains over 200 inches a year in the rainforest. But they have the trees and stuff are overgrown just like umbrellas. I've been in there and not got a drop on me, and it's pouring rain. So we camped, we put our tents up, but we didn't have to really, because it doesn't get wet. The ground is dry, actually, quite often. Other areas, you'll see a lot of ferns and so forth, but if you get a chance, those who are from out of state, if you get a chance, go up the Olympic Peninsula. There's a circuit. You can go clear around the peninsula, and you can hit all those in those areas.
There's moss on everything.
Moss on everything. So you can't tell north from south, see? That's the way we Scots learned it, you know. The Cayuse is one over by Walla Walla. Now, this is the one that caused a lot of problems. And they're the ones that killed the Whitmans. And they're almost extinct because of... whenever they got sick, they'd throw their sick people into the river to cool off the fever, and it would kill them. Also, they would steal blankets and so forth that were from diseased immigrants that were on the wagon trains, and they'd leave them at the Whitman Mission and exchange them for others, or at the Walla Walla Hudson Bay Post. And so the Indians would steal and wrap up, and then they'd get the smallpox and the measles, which was fatal for them. They had no immunity. The Chehalis is the one that takes off of Grays Harbor, which is... Grays Harbor's up here, and it goes to... Chehalis goes over to Olympia. And this is where they wanted to make a canal one time from Olympia across there, and then also... another one. This is Grays Harbor up here. This is Willapa Bay. One time they Hudson Bay Company wanted to explore this area. And instead of going by ocean this way because it was winter, they drug their canoe from the Columbia River, this is Columbia River, up to Willapa Bay, paddled up to the shore up here, and then drug it across to the Grays Harbor. And then they went up the Chehalis River, which ended up at Olympia. They did everything the hard way, but they had a lot of help to paddle the canoes, so they made it. On this list, there's one, two, three, I think there's eight tribes in eastern Washington. The Cayuse, the Colville, the Kalispell, Klickitat, Nespelem, Okanagan, Palouse, Sanpoil, Walla Walla, and Wenatchee, which includes our Chelan tribe, and Yakima. I also have it up here if you want to look after or any time, or you can take a break and look at where they are. They're located. These are the main ones. They're not all of them, but they are the main tribes. These are all but the ones that have asterisks on them. The Chinook is not a federal tribe. Collets, Duwamish, and the Snoqualmie have not been recognized as federal tribes. I met, remember our singing group last weekend, Lucy? Mm-hmm. I met a young Indian girl. She's from the Snoqualmie tribe, and she has been up here about 1 year. When she was born in Snoqualmie County near the tribal reservation, or not, they don't have a reservation near where their tribal reservation would be, she says her mother, they were subject to so much prejudice that she shipped her down to relatives in California, where she stayed there almost 30 years. She came back within the last year, and she told me she went through a ceremony to get her Indian name back. And
well, her mother was married to a white man, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's very attractive, mm-hmm. and sharp gal, nice looking. And she was so proud of her heritage, you know, and I think that's good.
But now they're on that federal list, they can also get the scholarships, right?
Mm-hmm. Government. Yeah, and they get reservations, rights to reservations. A lot of them don't have individually reservations, but like in eastern Washington, we have four reservations, but they have, I think 8-10 tribes right on the Colville Reservation alone. Then they have the Sanpoil, and they got four over there. Yakima, of course, is a big one, and the Colville is a good size. And
they're all dry.
Dry.
And dusty. And
yes. Desert. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The Yakima has the probably the best of any of the eastern Washington ones. They have tribal fishing rights on the Columbia River as well as Yakima River, which is has steelhead. They have the rights to all the berries and Adams, Mount Adams on the berry fields. The Spokane ones are probably the poorest. The most wealthy ones are the ones on the coast, and the reason is they subsist on seafood. Salmon was their main thing, and they really lived on it. And in spite of what everybody says, they protected the salmon run quite often. They worshipped the salmon because that was their lifesaver. They'd stock up enough for the winter, and then also they'd stock up enough so they could trade with the eastern Washington tribes who came over on Natchez Pass mostly, although some came over Snoqualmie, near Snoqualmie Pass. The western Washington ones were the rich ones. They're the ones that had the potlatches. They lived off of clams, and I think they even had oysters back then. They had berries, they had venison, they had elk. And so they were called the richest Indian tribes in the United States because they had that subsistence the year round. Eastern Washington had a little problem. They got their salmon, but they had to smoke it or salt it or store it away for the winter. And they dug camas bulbs and stuff like that, which they ground up and made bread and so forth out of. Okay, any questions on the reservation? We have a lot of problems. I think we have about 24 reservations, and we're getting about 24 gambling establishments. It's the way I have a copy of the treaty that was signed on the Medicine Creek, 1854, which Governor Isaac Stevens did. And I looked and looked, and there's nothing about gambling. They had the right to take fish, and I'll get to that a little later. But I am sure that there was not supposed to be any liquor on the. That was one of the rules on reservation, never to have liquor. And every one of them have now when they're on the casinos, because you can't gamble unless you drink. And the more you drink.
Sell tax-free cigarettes and fireworks that aren't allowed in the state of Washington.
And they have a lot of, and of course their reservation rights. I'll move on to, we have 25 tribes in the interior plateau. They call this area up here the interior plateau. And anything from the Cascades over in this area, it's higher ground. It runs about from about 1,500 feet above sea level to about, wherever the mountains are, it's much higher. But on the average, it's around 2,200 feet elevation. And it's all kind of like a plateau. Palouse in particular, this area has rolling hills. And when the early farmers came, they didn't farm anything but down in the flat. Well, then they found out that they could run combines at an angle on those hills. And so that is really wealthy wheat and peas is what they raise there also, because they adapted to it. But the Indians liked it. The Indians were in eastern Washington had a rough time until the Spaniards came into the southwest United States, and they released horses. And the horses migrated up here. And so when the Indians started riding, then they could travel, and they had a big area in eastern Washington. They had miles that they could cover, where before they had to have everything on foot. They had the women drag their tents and stuff along that they used, but they until they had horses, they were limited to a small area. And this caused a lot of problems for the settlers when they first came, is because the Indians would say, well, this area that we're in, that's one of our hunting areas, or that's a fishing area, although they weren't there at the time. But the settlers would move in, it was to them vacant land. And so that's what started our Indian Wars, that and the treaties that Isaac Stevens got them to sign. I've mentioned the potlatches. We have two brands of horses actually kind of bred for the Indian tribe, the Cayuse and the Appaloosie, which is the Palouse. The Cayuse is they claim they had the first horse, and then the Nez Perce have them. One of the favorite riding horses of people other than your thoroughbreds.
The horses changed the living quite a bit of the Indians, and it made them, they loved to fight. And so that made them easier for them. They could get around faster with the horses. It says this, if nothing else, most Washingtonians have come from somewhere else, or their parents or grandparents did, and few have roots that run deeper than three generations. I'm unusual with five. But among the Native American population, many are immigrants from Alaska, British Columbia, or the Plain States. Until Alaska became a state, even the Native American convicted felons were incarcerated in the former McNeil Island Penitentiary in Washington State's Puget Sound. For a long time, any crime that was done in Alaska, because Alaska was a territory until it became a state, and so they'd bring them down here, and they loved it down here. We had them working on our tugboats and everything else for the penitentiary. When it became a state, they had to forcibly remove those from the prison and move them back up into Alaska, so they didn't want to move away from the Puget Sound, because it was so ideal. There was no hard winters, and they were on the water. You know, you could never get them to escape. They'd never escape. So they used a lot of them for trustees on the tugs and stuff for the penitentiary. In the northern part of the state, the Confederated Colville tribes inhabit one of 26 Indian reservations, and that's the large one. And up in the Okanagan, we have up in this area, we have all these tribes. We have a group ministry. Remember that, Lucy? That Dayton
Edmonds. Okanagan's ministry.
Now there's, I think, about seven tribes in that. And so that's, we have a Methodist, he's a lay person doing it. Mm-hmm. Very good. He's
Dayton Edmonds.
Dayton Edmonds is one of the favorites of all kids, wherever he comes.
And he's a Native American from Oklahoma.
Yeah, he's a long ways from his native area, but he's one of our ones we're proud of. It says that we have at least 67,000 American Indian residents in the state of Washington, and many of mixed ancestry. A lot of our white families are in the state of Washington are descended from Indians. The men came out and they married, and this woman, this Snohomish woman, she says, "You're a historian." I said, "Yeah." She says, "I'm trying to find the cemetery that's near Steilacoom that has all the pioneers buried in." I says, "Yeah, I know where it is, and I got the names of everybody buried in it." And that was her ancestors in there. She has, they have American names. Young, it was one of them, but she gave me a list of them, and I said, "Yeah." So I gave her my card, and she's going to call me, and I'm going to meet with her, and I'm going to bring my book. I have a book I've compiled on the cemeteries of the old pioneers. It's called Old Settlers Cemetery. And they buried a lot of the settlers at Steilacoom whenever there was a shooting in one of the saloons. The only burial ground they had was either there or at the Western State Hospital, or it was Fort Steilacoom then.
Now, you've got one in Washington Boulevard. Have you done
that? That's the one. That's the old settlers. Okay. Uh-huh. They used to call it Gravelly Lake Cemetery because it's close. Yeah, that's the one where her relatives and ancestors are buried. So I want to get together with her, and she talked to me and almost missed the bus. They had to come and get her away from the table, you know, after the meal. We have seven tribes who have not been recognized by the federal government. And Steilacoom is one of them. And I've been working with the Steilacoom one. What we do is we put on programs together quite often. We have a native, he's part Indian, Danny Marshall, that speaks. So whenever we have a waterfront talk, I talk on the white settlers that came in that area, and he talks on the Indians or natives. And so, and he has drums, he beats me on PR, but we do that several times a year. We go down at Sunnyside Beach and we put on a program. I have some little short items on Indians, or Native Americans, as it should say. I mentioned about the Chinook jargon. The Nez Perce tribe, it's French. The word Nez Perce, and it mean, It was French for pierced nose, but this is a mistake. It was they didn't practice the nose piercing. We have young ones here that do, but they're not Native Americans, I don't think. But as some of the scholars believe it's also a corruption of the nez perce, meaning flat nose. So I don't know if that's true, because most of them, the natives I've seen down at Lapway, are no different than anybody else, really. The Medicine Creek Treaty Tree. Now, some of you Washingtonians that know where that is, as you're going to Olympia up the freeway, there's a dead, dying snag down just as you're getting up the hill. They built the freeway so it had to miss that tree years ago. It cost them thousands and thousands of dollars. They had to curve the road so it would not, and the tree was dying at the time they did that, but they had to miss all that bad publicity that they would have gotten if they had to run through the tree.
And what did it mean? I mean, what was the...
Okay, this is where they signed the 1854 Indian Treaty. And it was signed for, there's a lot of tribes, most of them from the southern Puget Sound area. There's a half a page of Indian names that they signed. Yes.
You mentioned Governor Stevens.
Uh-huh.
Was he governor of the territories then?
Yes.
Because Washington didn't become a state until 89.
Yeah, he was a Washington territorial.
Okay.
Well, what happened, 1853, Oregon became a state.
Yes.
And so the Oregon territory then was changed to Washington territory. So it included all of the state of Washington, and then all of Idaho. Idaho has a panhandle when it comes down here. All of Idaho, all of western Montana as far as the Rocky Mountains, and all of Wyoming as far as the Rocky Mountains. So it was a huge area, and it was all governed by this little area right in here. We had Olympia, but Governor Stevens was sent out to get these Indian contracts or Indian treaties signed. And so what he did is he went to place. He went to Walla Walla. He went to up at the by Seattle, another one up there, and then the Medicine Creek one. Medicine Creek was one of the first ones. He'd go there. He did ask all the chiefs to come. Well, a lot of the chiefs are smart. They wouldn't send the real chief. They'd send another one along, and they didn't send their warrior chiefs. They just sent the others. And some of them refused to sign the treaty. Well, if they refused to sign the treaty, they didn't get any federal rights. And of course, since this was a territory, it was all under the federal government. And so it was a kind of a bad deal. They wanted to put them on much smaller areas. And the reason they wanted to put them on smaller areas is they wanted, they tried to get all of them from these areas here because they wanted to run the railroad across. And this is the 1850s. The only railroad that had come across at that time was even contemplated was the Union Pacific and Central Pacific. It just wasn't even done yet. But they wanted something to go in the northern part because the pioneers, it took them too long. It took them 6 months to get here by wagon train, and that's the way that most of them came. 300,000 of them came on that to Washington, Oregon, and California. 300,000 on the wagon train alone because they could afford that. And ships, it took too long, and it was too expensive, so very few. They wanted to settle this area because it was a prime area. It had a lot of timber, but the only way they could get the railroads to go through there was to get the Indian lands away from them. And so this is what they did, and they moved all the reservations away from the railroads, where the railroad right-of-way would be. Isaac Stevens was also a surveyor, and so he surveyed routes. And the one that he ignored over Snoqualmie Pass eventually became Milwaukee's pass, and also our highway pass. It's the lowest one on the Cascades. But that was his main job.
The other pass is Stevens Pass.
Yeah, Stevens Pass
and
is that.
That's named after him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, that was and that was a high one. That was the highest railroad one. And so that's where they have a long tunnel.
Is that where that tunnel is?
Uh-huh. And the old highway you drive on, Stevens Pass, is where the old railroad tracks used to go. And so then when they rebuilt they drove it's almost an 8 mile long tunnel underneath the Cascades, and that shortened it, and that also it protected the railroad.
They have roofs over it when you,
Snow sheds, uh-huh.
Snow sheds.
Uh-huh. They had a tragedy on that railroad, and it killed 96 people. They had passenger trains, and they had a blockage, snow slides on each side. This is before the tunnel was in there. And they had some small tunnels, and they the slide came down and swept the trains down, passenger trains. They were there, up there almost 3 days before the slides wiped them out. And
when was that?
That was about 1906, something like that. It was shortly after the Great Northern came in. Okay, the Medicine Creek Treaty is dying, as I said, but Nisqually Chief Leshi, who's right close to where it is, right close to Olympia, he said he didn't sign it. There was an X on the Medicine Creek Treaty that they said that he signed it and had witnesses. But anyway, he was the one that started the war against the whites. He didn't like the treaty. So the Indian War of 1855 and 56 was started by him. He was accused of killing some army officers in the Pelt Valley. Well, actually, it's up in this area, over quite a ways over. But all the witnesses said he couldn't, where they saw him last, he couldn't have been there to do the killing. But they tried him. They tried him twice, and they found him guilty both times. One of the attorneys that helped convict him was Frank Clark, who developed this cemetery that old settlers on Washington Boulevard. He's the one that bought it for one of his relatives. But anyway, they convicted him. I'm going to hang him, and the army refused to. Although the army had they said it was war, and it was impossible for him to be, and they refused to have anything to do with him. And so then the civilians in Steilacoom, 700 of them signed a petition, except there wasn't 700 people in the whole area, but there were 700 signatures on the petition to hang him. And so they took him out to the Thunderbird area, which is in the new city of Lakewood, not too far from the...
mile from my house.
Yeah, real close. And they had to get a sheriff from Thurston County, they'd locked up our sheriff from Pierce County. He didn't want to be involved. And so it was an entire civilian operation, although it was a military tragedy. And so most of us still believe it.
Did they lynch him?
Well, no, they had tried him in trial. Okay. And he was tried. He had representation. But it wasn't fair. And we still believe today that he wasn't guilty of the crime that he was charged. They hung him.
Okay, so uh-huh. He was lynched.
Uh-huh.
A lynchman, yeah, okay.
And his brother, Quaymouth, went to the Capitol, and they were supposed to protect him, and he was killed supposedly by a Nisqually warrior for being a traitor. And it said he and his brother have been moved three times since they were been buried. And they're finally buried down at the Indian, what we used to call the Indian Hospital, where the Indian school is, down on River Road. Pelt River.
Mm-hmm. What's the book? Chief Leshi of the Nisqually?
Uh-huh.
It's an excellent book to read.
It's a good book. And there's several books been written about him and for him. He was he was a good leader of the Puyallups. It's too bad they lost him, because after he died, they had a pretty good sized reservation, and it finally ended up only being 33 acres. You know, the Indians had sold off so they could get drunk and things like that. They didn't have the supervision. The Puyallup Indian tribe didn't have the supervision that the Yakimas did. Now, this is Father Wilbur, was the Indian agent for 22 years. He wouldn't allow a liquor on the place, and he'd started industries that the Indians ran, and they still run them today near White Swan. They make furniture and everything else. They have factories going. They have a new... I think they're going to get a new gambling house there too, but they do have other industries besides. And he was, well, as long as he was there, they were on the straight and narrow. The Indian agents were political appointments, and which was a sad thing, because they weren't the best in the world. And most of them came from the East and hadn't lived with our Indians out here. Let's see, I want to get some of the short ones in here. Willie Frank, who was a Nisqually Indian, he lived to be 104, and he was the last full-blooded Nisqually Indian to die, and he died about in the 1960s. And Owen Bush, who came out in the Indian Wars, refused to enter the Indian War. I told you about George Washington, George Bush. No, that's my real George Bush. He was a black, and he came from the Midwest. They wouldn't allow him to own property back there, and they wouldn't allow him to own it in Oregon. And so he came up to Washington, and the territorial legislature granted him the right to own land. And so on his land, which is where the Olympia Airport is now and the surrounding area, when the wagon train people would come in hungry and starving, he'd give them food, but he says, you got to do that for your next ones that come in. You'll have to. And so he was a Baptist, and he was very much concerned about people. And so he's one of my heroes. He helped discover Newmarket, he and Michael Simmons, which is now Tumwater, which is just in the outskirts of Olympia. And he was one of the co-founders of that. He was very good. We had, during the Indian Wars, we had a lot of our army officers were trained. Grant was out here. Sheridan was out here. They got their basic training before the Civil War came on. And so some of them were up in our area. A Pickett, who was a Confederate, really, he was up at Bellingham. He was up in the Pig War, really. And he built a house in Bellingham, and that for his wife. And then he'd been in West Point, but he went to the Confederates. Then he came back after the war and built a house. And I would, Moses Lake and Moses, those of us who have been in around Moses Lake to camp, we learned long ago to drive pegs into our tents to hold them down, because every evening, and I always tell everybody, it's the spirit of Chief Moses coming back as revenge. A wind comes up and it will wipe out anything. I've never seen a wind like it. What it does, it goes down these coulees and narrows the wind down, just like a wind tunnel. And the wind really blows, and it'll blow any tent over. And it's something else. You've been there, Lucia.
Yeah,
I'm
camped there.
Yeah. We have some interesting areas in this.
Well, we also camped on Lake Chelan once, where if anybody was picked up at Fields Landing, we camped at 25 Mile Creek once, and the wind came down, and anybody traveling on the Lady of the Lake had to be seasick that afternoon. Oh, it was rough.
That's one of the things about Lake Chelan. There's one little harbor about halfway that they call Safety Harbor. It's a little nook. It's not very, you don't notice it from, but that's, if you get trapped between those rock walls, that's the only place you can retreat. And
that's where there was a fire when I came up in that area right there.
Uh-huh.
Maybe the way the wind blows has something to do with it.
Yeah, the wind is terrible. We had the fires last year. We came up just after the fires were ending, and it was we came up Navarro, I guess they call it, Canyon. It burned out every place that was in there. It had a little vacation. People retired up there and everything, and burned every home out of there. All their livestock and stuff were trapped. I would like to swing on to something else. Oh, yeah, Indian stories, we're not going to have much time for them. To the Indians, coyote, as some of them pronounce it, was quite a character. He could do quite a few things. In fact, for a while, the Indians related the coyote to Jesus because he could do miracles. And so there are a lot of little stories about him, and we thought maybe the Indians up here invented him, but actually down in New Mexico and other places, they have Chinook does the same kind of tricks. But we found out it was even down into central Mexico, they have stories of the coyote.
Did you have coyotes here?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we have them. We have a lot of them where I live.
Okay.
I have a lot of them because I used to be out at night when the railroad, and I walk down the right of way, and you get near their dens, and they'd be yip, 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 and they have a yip that you can't tell exactly where they are. When I get nearer the dens, and I sound like it was all around me, and then be silent, you know. And then I kind of worry, it's dark, you know. I didn't know if they were watching me or if they're wolves or not. But there is one little short one I'd like to do here. It's about called the War Against Chinook Wind. Now, you people who live in eastern Washington, Chinook wind comes in the spring and melts all the snow for us. Now, we look forward to that. Well, I always wonder why they call it Chinook wind. Well, this is the story of where it came from. It said it blew and blew and blew, and people did not know how to get rid of the wind. So Flounder, Skate, Blue Jay, and all the people held a council to devise some means of relieving the country. They resolved to go in the direction where Chinook wind lived and killing. All of their boldest warriors went. Blue Jay thought Skate was too clumsy to be of any value in a fight. They traveled for a long distance till they reached a spot which was calm. Here they discovered that the wind came from a high hill near them. At camp, they fell into controversy. Having gathered about the fire, they tried to decide on one to lead the attack upon South Wind. The person highest in favor was Skate. Blue Jay became angry. He said to Skate, "The enemy would never miss you, having once aimed at you. You are too ungainly. You are sure to be struck. I myself could shoot a hole right through you." "You could not," said Skate. "I could," says Jay. "Try it then," said Skate. "Go over there and shoot." "I'd kill you the first shot," said Jay. Skate marched away and said, "Now shoot." Blue Jay shot, but missed. Skate said, "Ah, it's my turn." So Blue Jay took his place as a target, while Skate aimed and shot. Blue Jay dodged, but was struck in the side and lay prostrate there. Skate removed the arrow, and Blue Jay recovered. Then the people chose Skate to lead them against the South, or the Chinook Wind. Among themselves, the people wondered, "What shall we do with South Wind when we get him? Shall we kill him? No, that would not be right." So they went to the hill, and there they found South Wind lying upon his side. "If you had killed me," said he, "things would be different. There would be disease and bad odor. Stand me up so the wind will not blow." So they stood him up on his feet. Said South Wind, "Hereafter, when it blows from the south, it will be only for a few days at a time. And that is why the south wind does not blow all the time." So I found out. Here, I thought it was something else. But there's a lot of little stories that they've done. And I have a book that's been out of print for 40 years that I found in a rummage sale one time. And so I copied some of those stories out of it. And they're funny. But most of them are on Coyote, but others, they use a lot of things in nature. And I'm wanting to see what this name of this young woman's name is. She told me, and it was a long name, and I says,
It's a long name when she said it.
But they go through a ceremony for it and to do it. One of our heroes was Timothy, a Nez Perce chief. And he was the first convert to Christianity, and he was at Nez Perce at Lapway, or Spaulding, actually. And Henry Spaulding was the missionary, but Eliza Spaulding is the one that converted him. This was and then in 1858, the Indians were involved in a battle. Up in Coeur d'Alene and Spokane. They were way up in up this area. They had the Coeur d'Alenes were over here in Idaho. They had the Yakimos came over, and the Caldwells came down from here. Colonel Steptoe left Walla Walla. He left down here, and he was going to go up to Caldwell. And it goes right, I lived right on the Caldwell Trail. He was heading up to Caldwell, and he got intercepted by Steptoe Butte, a little town of Rosalie, and all the Indians surrounded him. And I was just reading a story about it, and they ran out of ammunition, and they're just about ready to be slaughtered. There's over 200 of them. It's about the same numbers would have been killed if they'd been like Custer's 7th Cavalry when they had over 200 killed. They were surrounded, and finally Chief Timothy came up with some of his warriors, and he found a path. He knew above a path to get them away, and so they escaped to Fort Walla Walla. They only lost a few soldiers, but he saved that whole command. That was the reward for he was sympathetic to the whites. which was kind of bad, because later on in the 1877, Chief Joseph resisted being put on a reservation away from his Wallowa Lake, which is beautiful in Oregon. And instead of that, they wanted to move him to another reservation. And he didn't want to, but he didn't want to start the trouble, so he took all his women and the children and the older men, and they went over 1,000 miles evading the U.S. Army, and they made it almost to the Canadian border. They traveled, I think it was 1,200 miles or so. They had to stop and rest at Bear Palm, which is close, about 40 or 50 miles from the Canadian border. And they didn't realize that with the telegraph line they had for the railroad alerted the army commands, and so they had him surrounded. And so he had a famous little speech about giving up. He didn't want to fight anymore, and he says, "I want to go and find my children, although many of them are frozen to death," and so forth. But he outsmarted, they said, as many as 4,000 or 5,000 troops, and he had to, not only did he have only a few, I think he had 118 warriors, and then of course all the families, and he moved them successfully for several months. And it's too bad he didn't get across the Canadian border, because he deserved it. You know, we've been so cruel to our natives. You know, that I know what it'd be like if somebody says, "Get all this land here that belongs to me." And if this Stilicum tribe gets their tribal rights, I may have to pay more money to them, because my property is probably where their reservation would have been. But they deserve better than what they got. Okay, this is it. Thanks for coming. And my next one will be on the ethnic groups of the state of Washington. We have so many. Russian Germans. We have some on the blacks, some of the Asians, where they came from, why they came from, why they came here, and things like that. And so that'll be tomorrow at the same time. And then Saturday is the final one, and that'll be on women who've been overlooked in Washington state history. And I don't know how I'm going to shorten that to 1 hour. But I've run into more material about should have been in history books, and never was. Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you.